Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Purval is just starting his second term. Covington Mayor Ron Washington is starting the second year of his first term. And both men are poised to help their cities navigate this year's ramp-up of the massive Brent Spence Bridge Corridor project. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. They join me now about to talk about the Brent Spence, the challenges their cities face, and their priorities for 2026. Welcome back, Mayor Purval and Mayor Washington.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you both here. Mayor Purval, the day you were sworn in for your second term as mayor, you announced your support for an increase in the city's income tax. Why now and how much of an increase?
It's a great question, Lucy. Thanks again for having us here. On the beginning of our second term in office with 4 years behind us, we've done a lot of hard work. The hard work of getting us on a path, of dealing with the $400 million deferred capital maintenance bill on the capital side, with the creation of now a $1.8 billion trust fund, all hundreds of millions of dollars coming into the city, all without raising taxes. We've made cuts in the city to decrease our footprint and be even more efficient. But as I look to the future for our great city, and frankly for our great region, the financial picture continues to be a challenge, particularly with respect to public safety. This last summer, this last year, frankly, has been a challenging one for Cincinnati with respect to public safety. It's something that the council members and I live and breathe every day, and it weighs heavily on us. And the path that we're currently on is not sustainable to meet the community's expectations for how we should police. The walking patrols, the visibility, the overtime, the details, that is a huge cost to the city. And I believe that we need to continue to roll those strategies out in order to disrupt the violence. But that there's a cost associated with that. Those are all short-term solutions that I think are important, and we have to continue to be intentional about them. But the long-term solutions, getting to the root cause of so much of the violence, particularly the teen violence, which is a crisis point, far too many victims are children and far too many perpetrators themselves are children. And the solution to that is not policing alone. The solution to that is investing in affordable housing, investing in minority businesses, investing in creating opportunities for young people and for their parents that gives them a clear path to choose a job or a book rather than a gun or crime. And all of that takes some hard work. Now is the time to have this important and difficult conversation. And I'm the first to admit that anytime you're talking about revenues or taxes, it's emotionally charged. It's very challenging. But I believe now is the moment to do it because we have so much momentum at our back, because our population continues to grow, because businesses continue to come to not just the city, but the urban core, because we've done the hard work of rezoning our city in order to legalize housing and incentivize investing in our neighborhood business districts. It's important to me that this growth is shared not just with some of our neighborhoods, but with all of our neighborhoods. And that's why this council has put $6.5 million on the table for Bond Hill. That's why we put $4 million on the table for the West End and are, I think, expending $2 million for the Romac in the West End. But that can be true for not just two neighborhoods, but all of our neighborhoods if we have the commitment to fund our city at the level that I believe we need to fund it. And it's
didn't
important.
Didn't you promise no new taxes, though, during the railroad campaign?
I did not. What we talked about was the importance of selling the railroad in order to avoid taxes on the capital side. I was very clear with the reporters that I spoke with, including your colleague, Becca Costello, that was the case. Because if we step back, there's really two large buckets of our budget. There's the capital side, which is our roads and bridges, our police stations, our parks. And then there's the operating side, which largely goes to salaries. As I mentioned in the opening, we're on a path to sustainability on the capital side with the creation of the $1.8 billion trust fund, but we still have this challenge on the operating side, which so much of the operating is committed to public safety, which it should be. But in order to meet the expectations of our community, we have to continue to focus on making sure that those interventions are sustainable. And when you look at the competitive landscape of not just the region, but the state, Cincinnati has the lowest earnings tax of of the three big C's, we are lower than Covington, my colleague. We're also lower than, I believe, Norwood and other local municipalities. And so, you know, the from my perspective, it's very clear that we have to have this hard conversation over the next 60 days, and we have to see where we can agree and compromise for a stronger public safety and a stronger fiscal health moving forward. I have a very limited amount of time here in City Hall. And it's my job, I believe, to push forward these hard conversations that are critical for not just the next 2 or 4 years, but really for the next generation of Cincinnatians. And that's why I think the time is now.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Covington. I'm going to bug Mayor Washington with some questions in just a minute. But we had one question come in from Steve from Oakley. He writes, Covington has a payroll tax of 2.45%. Cincinnati currently has one at 1.8%. Efforts are in motion to increase the Cincinnati tax to be more in line with peer cities, as articulated by Councilman Nolan last fall. One would think having a lower tax rate would keep and attract employers and employees on this side of the river, meaning the north side, not to mention the people having more money to spend at local small businesses that Mayor Pureval and Council claim to champion. Higher tax rates is not a path to prosperity. That's what Steve had to say. Anything you'd like to respond with there?
Yeah, I respectfully disagree with Steve. I think, you know, the argument has been for a long time to keep Cincinnati taxes low in order to encourage growth. But when you look at the actual facts and the data, that has not necessarily been the case. It is an aspect, tax rates, when a company or a family decides to move to a place, but it is not dispositive. And you only need to look at Columbus, which is growing far faster than we are and has much higher taxes than we do. So it's a piece of the puzzle, but you have to take a comprehensive look. And I would again reiterate that tax levels are but one piece of the picture. This council has also looked at TIF reform, at tax abatement reform. We've also looked at, you know, the rezoning efforts in order to grow our city. And we believe, I believe, that this is the next piece to comprehensively continue to grow, but specifically to equitably grow, to make sure that we are committing dollars to neighborhoods that have not seen that kind of investment or that kind of catalyzing movement.
Well, Mayor Washington, I want to turn to you and Covington. I know Covington has faced some financial headwinds for several years. A lot of the big employers were having folks work from home, and that really affected your earnings tax revenues. How does the city stand financially now? What are you looking at in terms of the budget?
Thank you for the question. And once again, thank you for having me on. You know, it was no secret. The IRS, the federal government, decided to make slashes throughout the country. The city of Covington is home to IRS. It's our second largest employer behind Fidelity Investments. When they decided to cut federal workers, it hurt the city of Covington to the tune of about $1.5 million in payroll tax.
That per year?
Per year, yes, ma'am. So what did we do? We did as a city. We tightened up our belt like anybody at home would. We looked around. We looked for savings. We held off on the majority of workforce raises. We didn't fill jobs in the city. We tried to become more proactive. We are adopting a AI strategy. There's no doubt at City Hall we could use more people. We're probably down 20, 25 people at City Hall, but it wouldn't be smart to fill those positions. So we've got to work smarter. So we are, you know, looking at AI, and our upper management staff has embraced it to help reduce the workload. Another thing that we're doing is we're looking at EVs. So our city is going to be progressive in that space and look at if we should start bringing some EVs online. It looks positive. The data is showing it's positive to create savings there. So that's what's hurt us with the IRS. But there's good news. There's good news. Covington is a place of buzz. There's a lot of things that are happening. You know, for the first time ever, we have actually seen an uptick in business to the tune of $1 billion in annual payroll our businesses are reporting. Remember, we're a small town. We're the fifth largest city in the state of Kentucky, but we're not so large that we don't listen to our community. So we're happy to do that. We're a town, a city that thrives in small businesses. So what's that mean? That means that we meet them where they're at. For every dollar we invest in small business, we receive about $11 back in infrastructure spending from that small business. So we're being smart. We're trying to do the best we can. And, we have a lot of momentum, a lot of economic development that we can speak about later.
Yeah. Well, let me turn to the Brent Spence Bridge Project. That's something that I know a lot of people who live in both these communities have top of mind because it's a big one.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I'll start with you, Mayor Washington. What impact do you have that to expect that to have on traffic, residents, businesses, and how is the city of Covington looking to really mitigate that?
Good question. There will be an impact. But as John Lewis would say, this is good trouble. This is good trouble because this is something our region, our area needs. I can tell you that we've had a good partnership with the Kentucky Transportation. There will not be an exit that's closed to Covington. You'll always be able to get to Covington. Also, when will you see the barrels? The barrels will start showing up probably mid-year. So what does that mean? That means that we will be constantly communicating with our community, letting them know how to get our city. We've created a task force. It's called Bridging the Gap Task Force. What that is it's a group of individuals that are made up of community members and businesses that are going to be affected by the closure. I was able to go to Frankfort and meet with our transportation secretary, and through that, the governor of Kentucky, he allocated money for our Bridge the Gap, $750,000, to let everybody know Covington is open for business, and we will be open for business. We will make it as easy as possible. We look at investing that money into a marketing campaign to let everyone know how to reach our small businesses, how to come work and play in our city. We will do it. Once you're in the city, you'll be met with wayfinding. We just unveiled an app where you'll know where to park at. Along with that app, it's a partnership with small businesses. So when you're on that app, you'll also to be able to see, hey, if I park here, I can walk in this business and I can get a discount. So we're trying to meet the community where it is. There's going to be disruptions, but we should know plenty of time to signal to the community how easy it is to get to our city.
Yeah. Mayor Purell, how's the city of Cincinnati kind of bracing for impact as that work ramps up?
Yeah, the mayor covered a lot of the same things that we're doing. We're obviously really focused right now on making sure that, number one, the project moves forward as effectively and on budget as possible. And number two, that we mitigate any of the disruption that is necessarily going to come because of the construction on both sides of the river and frankly, on top of the river. But I don't want to breeze past the fact that Mayor Washington mentioned this is good trouble. It really is. There's going to be some pain over the next 7 or so years as we complete this project. But it's necessary. Again, it's another issue that we worked very hard in collaboration with Mayor Washington and his predecessor, with Governor Beshear, Governor DeWine, and our Senate delegation to actually get the dollars for this project. And given all the uncertainty in Washington, D.C. right now, it is, frankly, a testament to the state and local and federal leadership that this project has not been affected by so many of the cuts at the federal level. And so really do want to praise our two senators from Ohio, Senator Moreno and Senator Husted, for continuing that strong partnership for this critical project.
Well, I'm talking with the mayors of Cincinnati and Covington for the full hour today about their city's challenges and priorities for 2026. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Mayor Washington, speaking of bridges, the 4th Street Bridge closed between Newport and Covington, closed as of this morning. What impact are you expecting that to have on the city's residents and businesses? That's certainly smaller than the Brent Spence, but still used by a lot of people.
Exactly. It's going to have an impact. And once again, this is a necessary thing. You know, the business areas of Covington downtown, Covington, where the Covington Central Riverfront, formerly known as the IRS, that's a brand new neighborhood. There's going to be a lot of development there. Newport is seeing a lot of development ovations. It just makes sense to have a bridge that can handle that capacity, have a bridge that's more pedestrian friendly, more bicycle friendly. But it's got to close to do that. They have to tear it down. There's a lot of people don't realize there's utilities that are underneath the bridge. So that's why it's got to be, that's why they actually won't see it come down for a few months, because they have to move the utilities. So what have we done? Once again, communicating. We will communicate with the public as much as possible. We've done that. The Kentucky Transportation Cabinet has worked with Tank. So for the pedestrians that need to get across, there'll be a shuttle. There's locations throughout our city in Covington and Newport that will shuttle not only pedestrian but bicyclists as they're going about their way. But people have to remember is, you know, I come from a family that we didn't have a car until I was 18 years old. Okay, so my transportation was on foot. I get it. We need to be there. Finally, was able to buy a bicycle after high school. You know, rode a bike to work. So we need to communicate with our public. We'll continue to do that. But we are concerned about the businesses. That same strategy, bridging the gap, is for both cities. And it's the communicating to the public on how to get there. You know, one of our restaurant owners comes to me and he says, am I concerned? Yes, I am concerned. So I did a little survey online. I asked my customers, how do you get here? And do you still plan to get here? And they said, yes, just please tell us how to get there. We love Covington. We love doing business in Covington. We're going to get there. Please let us know how. And that's our goal.
You mentioned this $750,000 that you secured from the state to kind of help with all of this. I know Covington's also been talking about designating a common consumption area to help businesses, but there have been questions about whether a couple of city commissioners maybe violated the city's ethics ordinances related to that plan. Where does the proposal stand on the common consumption area, and when are you expecting a ruling from the Northern Kentucky Regional Ethics Enforcement Committee?
Thank you for the question. So as far as the CCA, what we call it, the common consumption area goes, we have given that to our staff. So our staff's vetting that. What's that mean? What's it going to cost? You know, when you're talking about a common consumption area, you're talking about public safety. How much more police officers are you going to need? You're talking about public works. Who's going to pick up the trash down there? You're talking about code enforcement. You're talking about all those things. So as I said earlier, we have to be extremely mindful of our budget. We do. What's the financial impact of the CCA? So staff's looking at that. We expect a report back maybe in the next month or so, and then it will go to the Board of Commission to make a decision. As far as the ethics complaint, you know, the ethics committee has not, they do not directly talk to necessarily the mayor or other commissioners. It's a conversation that goes on between the people that have recused themselves. Two commissioners have recused themselves. I believe one commissioner has asked for a ruling on that. It has not come to the body. So I have nothing to report on that.
Okay. Well, we will be back after a short break. We're going to continue our conversation with Mayor Washington and Mayor Puerval, and we're going to talk about public safety. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with Covington Mayor Ron Washington and Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Puerval. We're talking about their city's challenges and opportunities and their priorities for this year. You can join the conversation. Just call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. I do want to talk about public safety now. Mayor Puerval, an 11-year-old girl, was fatally shot on New Year's Day when she was at a park in the West End. Mayor Washington, I know Covington deals with gun violence, too. I want to start with you, Mayor Puerval. What are your public safety priorities for 2026?
Thanks, Lucy. It's, you know, when you look at the trauma and tragedy that has been inflicted far too casually and far too often throughout our city, it's truly heartbreaking. You know, I've got a 6 and a 3-year-old with my wife, and I cannot imagine the pain that those families experience on a far too often basis. And so, to answer your question, everything we can in order to address this crisis, with all of our partners, particularly with respect to juveniles. You know, the shooting death of Queen Ari and the shooting death, you know, a few years ago of Dominic, another 11-year-old in the West End, is not just tragic but unacceptable. And the city has really tried to take a comprehensive approach, of course, supporting our police officers who do a very, very challenging job, to make sure that they have the training and the resources and the support to be visible, to create those genuine and long-lasting community relationships within these hotspot areas and throughout our city, and to increase visibility and enforcement. We've done that through partnerships with the Sheriff's Office and also with State Highway Patrol that we're continuing into this year. We've done that, as I mentioned earlier, with walking patrol, something that CPD hasn't done in a very long time, to have police officers on the ground, walking a beat, engaging with the community and having eyes on some of the areas that we're concerned about. Increasing bike patrols for the same strategies, really investing in license plate readers and drones so that we can have a more efficient and effective response when there's a critical incident, and that we can also send in drones, for example, into areas where police officers may not easily access or can be a first responder to better assess the situation before we send in our human capital. But again, you know, the long-term fix to these issues, or at least mitigating them, have to do with generational poverty. Too often, there are not enough opportunities for our young people to engage in substantive activities, which is why we've really doubled down on Breck at Night, which is why we continue to expand our partnerships with the Boys and Girls Club, opening a new facility in the Roll Hill area, why we continue to push to rehab the rec center, the Dunham Rec Center, which has not seen an investment in a very long time. And now that we have the new railroad dollars, we're able to do that. Why we're trying to strengthen our relationships with JFS, with CPS, and with our justice system, and why we will continue to use enforcement where necessary. Enforcement with respect to the curfews in the urban core, and enforcement with respect to continuing to partner with our state and federal law enforcement agencies to, you know, stem the tide of the illegal guns that continue to flood into our community. We really need the support of our federal and state partners on that specific issue. There are far too many guns in our community. You know, many, when I talk to many mayors across the country, they're having problems with ghost guns, with, you know, 3D manufactured guns that are untraceable. We don't necessarily have as big of a problem with that because there are so many guns that are just available, particularly to our youth. And so we're trying to take a comprehensive approach in order to address those issues. And that's why, again, I go back to the earlier segment where we are talking about the resources necessary in order to disrupt and break the cycle of poverty.
What about Covington, Mayor Washington? You're a former law enforcement officer yourself. What are your public safety priorities in your city?
As a retired police officer, now mayor of the city, I can talk as much as I want to about our city being named by Money Magazine as one of the top 50 cities, or by HGTV and Food and Wine for getting national recognition. I can talk about that all day. But before I need to talk about that or focus on those things, I have to have a safe city. Everything we do is about public safety. Covington is known as a safe city. My first night at the strike of midnight as the city's mayor, I was in a police car. That's how I spin it, because I know at the end of the day, public safety is number one. Yes, we need to have a strong police and fire department. We need to pave the roads. Those three things come first. What we've done, our initiatives are simple. Our police chief was a cadet. He was a cadet writing parking tickets, and he came up through the police department. So he is, you know, is very well known in our community. He knows our community. We have a very robust community liaison program. We have 19 neighborhoods in our city. What does that mean? That means when that neighborhood has a meeting, for the most part, we try to send somebody from the community liaison department to understand what's going on. That's what we do as a city. We try to be in contact. We have a very good relationship with our high school to try to encourage people, young people, to consider law enforcement. We are constantly recruiting Covington residents to be police officers. As much contact as possible, because that builds up a relationship with your law enforcement that is needed. Because at the end of the day, we can't be everywhere, but our community can. And if there's a trust with their police department, they can let us know what's going on and maybe we can address it. I know this as a cop, a former cop, but there's a lot of responsibility that goes along with law enforcement, and trust is the main one.
Again, we're talking for the full hour with the mayors of Cincinnati and Covington. If you've got questions, call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Mayor Pureval, you talked about some of the technology that the city is using to really improve and enhance public safety. What about the city's partnership with Ohio State Highway Patrol? Is that something you plan to extend? How
Yes.
do you think that's been working?
I think it's been working very well. I mentioned all of the new asks we're making of our brave men and women in CPD. And we need more bandwidth, we need more support, and we need more partnership. Really want to give praise to Governor DeWine. You know, a lot of the time in current politics, you know, so many leaders are unfortunately use politics cynically to push one agenda or the other. And in my partnership, in our partnership with Governor DeWine, that has not been the case. He has been forthright. He has been supportive, and he has offered resources like State Highway Patrol in order to help us address this this juvenile crime crisis and just crime in general. And those partnerships are working. And so we are in the process of extending our relationship with the Highway Patrol over the next year. My commitment is to continue to put in place strategies from this last year that we believe are working. And that is certainly one of them. I also have to, not have to, but want to praise Sheriff McGuffey, who jumped in partnership with RCPD and with Highway Patrol to give us even more resources, particularly in the urban core. And that partnership is really strong. And it's strong because of her fantastic leadership, and so proud of our relationship and the work that she's doing. You know, this is a situation where the data says what the data says, but as Mayor Washington mentioned, you know, none of the rest of this matters if we're not getting public safety right. It has to be a priority, not just in our rhetoric, but also in our policies and in our resources. And we're committed to making sure that that continues to be the case, because, you know, the as I mentioned, the data will say what the data says, but it's also critically important that people feel safe, that they perceive our city and our urban core to be safe, and we're going to continue to work on that and prioritize it.
Mayor Washington, Covington's police department did come under some scrutiny last year after a protest on the Roebling Suspension Bridge. More than a dozen protesters were arrested by Covington police, including a couple of journalists. Did you have any concerns about the way the department and chief handled that situation?
Well, I think that, you know, Covington's has a board of commissioners. We were very concerned about the situation, and we were concerned that, you know, that we found out exactly what took place. Under our former government, the police chief and the city manager makes the decisions on discipline. Only time that we come in is if the officer that is going to be disciplined, if they appeal the decision, then it comes to the board of commissioners. So let me say that first of all. The incident on the suspension bridge, what took place was there was people in the roadway. They were there unlawfully. The officers that arrived to the arrived on the scene did not know they were there. Did not realize that there was a protest in the city of Cincinnati, and they were coming across the bridge. So they were caught by surprise. And then we saw what took place. There was an investigation, an extensive investigation done by the police department. Hundreds of hours of body cam footage was taken a look at. Civilian footage was taken a look at. The police department ruled that they felt it was a dynamic situation, but there could be lessons learned there. One of the things is they found fault with a particular police officer's actions. That police officer received a 30-day punishment, 30-day suspension, and also he had to be retrained. Also, lessons learned was we need to do a better job of de-escalation, and we need to let the public know that we are in support of their right to assemble peacefully, and we need to help with that. And our police department's looking at that and providing more training for officers. It's a valuable fundamental right that we in the Board of Commission believe in, but it's got to be done the right way. You can't block a roadway. You just cannot do that. But our police officers should not also be baited, and they should not respond to the bait like they did. And I think the police chief has sent that message to the police department. But for one officer's actions, we had multiple officers involved in a situation, and they acted very appropriately. And there's lessons to be learned there. And I can tell you as a retired police officer that it's one of the toughest jobs that you could ever have. Think about that for a second. They have a job where they are required to wear a camera. Okay, think about that for a second. They have to wear a camera. How many jobs are you required to have a camera? So the scrutiny is very, very high, and we're seeing why people are not choosing to be law enforcement officers because of the high level of scrutiny, and for a decision that you may make that happens in seconds that can cost you your life, someone else's life, and your livelihood. So we're well aware of that. And we set the expectations very high for our law enforcement officers, and it's important for us to support them.
You know, Mayor Purval, Mayor Washington just mentioned Covington's police chief. I want to talk about how City Manager Cheryl Long placed Cincinnati Police Chief Teresa Thiege on administrative leave last year. An investigation into her leadership is ongoing. What can you tell us about her job performance? What more do you think she should have been doing or could have been doing as chief when she was active in that role?
I appreciate the question, Lucy. The administration is going through their process of reviewing all of those materials, and it would be inappropriate for me to get out ahead of it. But what I can say is that I have complete confidence that the administration will run their process as effectively as possible. And in the interim, Interim Chief Henney has done a fantastic job. He has been out in the community, speaking with stakeholders, speaking with neighborhood leaders, speaking with civic leaders, to better understand the challenges that they see as the issue, not just in our urban core, but throughout our city. He has strengthened our relationships and partnerships with the sheriff's office and also with State Highway Patrol. And he has, made some changes with respect to staffing and strategy that I think are innovative and effective. And so I have complete confidence in him while this process takes place.
What about the city manager herself? I know council is going to be reviewing her performance mm-hmm. soon. How do you think she's been doing?
Yeah, I think she's been doing great. Look, we have had a challenging year this past year, and she'll be the first one to tell you that that's the case. I'll just give you an example. Last year we had a snow event that was one of the largest, and I think the largest in the last decade, and the city did not respond effectively. Period. It was not good enough. The city manager made a lot of changes to the department, both HR-wise, process-wise, and also resource-wise. And in addition to that, we've also invested in our public services garage because so many of our trucks were down during that event, which is unacceptable. We've invested in new technology so that we can get to the routes more effectively and efficiently. And, you know, knock on wood, but this most recent, this winter that we're in and the handful of snow events that we've had, we have responded much more effectively. And that's what I'm really looking for in a leader, someone who can take responsibility, be eyes wide open about the real challenges that we're facing, and work hard to fix them, not to blame other folks or to pass the buck, but to own it and to fix it. And that's exactly what she's done. I will say that this is, Cheryl is one of the most I think, reviewed city managers in our city's history. She gets a review, I believe, every year, which is not something that has happened in the past. And in this first quarter, I believe council will be taking up another review of the city manager. And look, there's opportunities for improvement. That's true for me as well. You know, what's most important to me is that the leadership in the city takes responsibility, owns up when things can be better, but then most importantly, actually makes them better. And that's what I've seen so far.
We have to take another break very soon, but very quickly, Mayor Pierville, I want to ask you about a couple of settlements that the city has dealt with, is dealing with. The city recently agreed to pay the bulk of an $8.1 million settlement over the 2020 racial justice protests. There have been reports that the city's in settlement talks with the family of Ryan Hinton, who was fatally shot by a police officer last year. With the case related to the 2020 protests, some council members were concerned that the city paid the bulk of that. What can you tell us about that? And then I'm going to ask you about the Hinton settlement.
You know, when with respect to settlements in general, I think it's important that the city empower their attorneys in the solicitor's office in order to negotiate those settlements and bring recommendations to the council. And with respect to the 2020, I believe, settlement, you know, that's the process that took place. It's also important to remember that these actions, this incident happened before this council or I were in office. And so we really do rely on the city solicitor's institutional knowledge and institutional memory to make recommendations to us. Part of that settlement also included the county, and so it was a multi-party settlement that I think was in the best interest of the city. No admissions were made, but rather taking a look at the facts of that case, comparing it with the settlements from cities all across the country, because those protests were countrywide, and when you compare our settlement terms to many of our peer cities, our settlement terms were far more competitive. And I think that's the result of some really good legal work from our solicitor's office.
And what are the considerations going into a potential settlement with the Hinton family?
Yeah, you know, the administration is leads all of our negotiations or conversations with counsel that has threatened litigation. I don't want to comment on any specific instance of that, but I can say that anytime we get a letter threatening litigation, it's the solicitor's office to engage with that attorney, better understand the strengths or weaknesses of their case, and better understand what a potential resolution would look like, including litigating. Part of that analysis includes the strengths and weaknesses, the risks of pursuing litigation. And with any settlement, the administration is in the driver's seat with respect to analyzing those terms. You know, I have not been briefed on any settlements on that subject, and I can definitively say that there is no settlement agreement on that subject. But I don't want to go further into detail on that because it's very much in progress.
We'll be back after another short break to wrap up our conversation with Mayor Pierville and Mayor Washington. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking today about the opportunities and challenges facing Cincinnati and Covington this year with the leaders of those two cities. My guests are Covington Mayor Ron Washington and Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Pierville. If you've got questions or comments for them, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. I do want to talk with both of you about these major riverfront development opportunities that both cities have. Cincinnati has empty parcels on the banks that we've been talking about on this program for a while. Covington has the Covington Central Riverfront site, that the former IRS site that has so much potential. I want to ask you both, I don't know who wants to answer first, what kind of impact is the current economic climate having on these projects? I mean, there's so much potential there, but I know that it can be tricky to get these things going.
I'll jump in there. It has some. We're talking to developers. Our economic development team are talking to developers. There was some hesitation, the tariffs, especially when it came to steel, had a negative impact on the Covington Central Riverfront. But we're seeing those issues resolved now. We just completed phase one of the Covington Central Riverfront. You can see it's we have buildings raising out of the ground, some residential buildings. We have two large apartment buildings coming. We have condominiums and private homes that are being built on the site. Phase two construction will start this year. That's a new parking garage of some 600 spots and commercial development. And thanks to Mayor Aftab, we've got a beautiful view of the of the city of Cincinnati. So there's a lot of good momentum going at that site. Every day, it seems like we're engaged in project discussions there. We're anxious, but at the same time, we're hopeful that the momentum will continue at the site as the economy appears on our end seems to be improving as more developers are engaging with our economic development staff.
Yeah. How about for the banks, Mayor Pierval?
Yeah, it's a similar picture. There's so much momentum in our urban core right now, and the challenges are real. Mayor Washington mentioned the tariffs. I would add the steel, gypsum, timber, all of the component parts of not just construction, but specifically housing construction, which, we're very passionate about in Cincinnati. Because of the tariffs, all of those things are more expensive. And so as a result, it's harder to get things out of the ground. The macroeconomic picture is challenging as well. There's uncertainty in the economy. So capital investments, a lot of folks are holding those back to better understand which direction the economy is going to go. There's also, real concern around interest rates and how expensive getting access to capital is. But despite those headwinds, in the last 4 years, we have done an extraordinary amount of investing into our urban core, specifically to make sure that we have a vibrant downtown. We just opened up the convention center, the reimagining, $600 million. That's step two. The first step was Elm Street Plaza, which is a new, beautiful civic space right in our urban core that is absolutely gorgeous. If people haven't checked that out, I would encourage you to. Second step was the convention center. I feel like a lot of the coverage was focused on the sign. I'm glad people like the sign. I was hoping people would like it. It's fantastic. And step three is the headquarter hotel that we expect to finish very soon. In addition to that, going back to our original point about the Brent Spence Bridge, because we did the really hard work of redesigning the approach, which was about 20 years old and out of step with the priorities of our city now, we were able to reclaim two city blocks west of the convention center. And so this convention center district, despite all of those macroeconomic challenges that I was talking about, is really full steam ahead. And it's anchored on the east by the formerly abandoned Saks building, which now brought a new employer into our urban core and is opened with Salazar and some other great vibrant small businesses. In addition to that, we've redone the Macy's building, now has over 300 units of housing, many of which is workforce housing. Carew Tower is next. We did Mercantile Building. So there's a lot of momentum despite those challenges, and the banks absolutely needs to get done. It's been over two decade saga of push and pull from the city and the county. We've proven at the city and the county, both with our partnership with Sheriff McGuffey and our partnership with the county commissioners on the convention center and headquarter hotel, that we've strengthened that relationship. And the banks is next. I have great hopes that we can get the ball moving, particularly on Lot 24, have mixed use, create new civic spaces, continue the vibrancy. I hear so often from folks in our community when they visit other downtowns throughout the country, not just our peer cities, but even cities larger than ours, that we are just crushing it. The amount of activities, of events, of civic spaces that are programmed is really a feather in our cap, and we've got to continue that momentum. Now that we're in this post-pandemic economy, live events, creating neighborhoods that are dense, diverse, and walkable are critically important, and that will continue to be our North Star.
Mayor Washington, we got a question from Eric that relates to something we were talking about earlier. Will the people and bike shuttle be open nights, weekends, and holidays? He's talking about that shuttle to help with the 4th Street Bridge closure.
You know, that I'm going to do something that probably most politicians don't do. I'm not totally sure.
Okay.
I know, obviously, during the business day and the evenings, it'll be open. Weekends and holidays, I'm not sure. You could go to Tank's website, and also you can go to the City of Covington's website and KYTC. Also, I encourage you to download the apps. We'll make sure it's on there.
Okay.
To make sure that we can address that.
Well, and our producer went to those websites, and she says, yes, it will.
Okay.
So
thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, we are running so short on time, but I do want to ask you, this is unfair, but I want to ask of each of you in about a minute, what are your top priorities for 2026? I'll start with you, Mayor Pureball. You got about a minute.
Yeah, I might be even briefer because I feel like over the last hour, we've talked a lot about those priorities. But in summation, you know, the top priority continues to be public safety, creating affordable housing, particularly between the 30 to 60% AMI, addressing the increase in homelessness that we have seen, partly due to some of the decisions from statewide electeds in Kentucky, continuing to grow our community by investing in small businesses and making sure that our public transportation is best in class. And that's why bus rapid transit is such a critical priority for us, not just right now, but into the future.
Okay. Mayor Washington?
I have a list, but I'll keep it brief. You know, first of all, if people can't live in Covington, businesses can't thrive. So housing tied to workforce needs is a real priority of our city. Youth recreation and opportunity. Keeping our city open for the bridge work and obviously clear leadership and accountability. As the rest of the nation, we're suffering problems in housing. We created a task force. That task force addressing it. We have over 200 vacant lots. We're trying to build on those lots. We're trying to do everything we can on a local level to provide housing. It's tough, but we're doing everything possible, and we will keep focused on that.
Well, gosh, we have so much more we could talk about. I really appreciate you both spending the hour with us. I've been talking with Cincinnati Mayor Aftab Pureval and Covington Mayor Ron Washington. Thank you both so much for your time today. I hope we can have you back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.